Welcome to Zichru Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're Masechet Shabbos Daf Chaf. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, the Mishnah at the bottom of Yud Tes Amud Beis stated that one may not roast meat, onions, or eggs Erev Shabbos unless there is enough time for them to become roasted before Shabbos. Rabbi said in the name of Rav that the Mishnah means that there must be enough time for the food to become roasted as the food of Ben Drosai, Malchel Ben Drosai. Ben Drosai was a bandit that would cook his food one-third of the normal time. That's according to Rashi. Point number two, Rav Chisda explains that we learn from the pasuk, Lo Savaru Eish Bechol Mishmoseichem B'Yom HaShabbos, you shall not kindle fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day, that it is forbidden to ignite a fire in Moshvoseichem, which means anywhere outside of the base of Migdash, as opposed to the burning of sacrificial parts and fats on the Mizbeach, the temple altar, which is permitted. However, this exemption of igniting a fire on Shabbos only applies to the Karbanos, which is, so to speak, for Hashem, and does not apply to kindling the pyre in the base of Mokad, the fire chamber, being that the fire there is only for the use of men. The reason why lighting the pyre in the base of Mokad was permitted before Shabbos, and there was no concern that one might come to stoke the fire after nightfall, is that the Kohanim are conscientious, Kohanim Zrizinhen, and they'll ensure no one comes to stoke it. And point number three, the opening mission of the second parak of B'mem Medlikin identifies wicks that may not be used for Shabbos lights because they do not hold the flame well, and fuels that are prohibited to be used because they are not easily drawn into the wick. All right, so let's do a review. Point number one, the mission at the bottom of Yud Tes Amud Beis states that one may not roast meat, onions, or eggs every Shabbos unless there is enough time for them to become roasted before Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar said in the name of Rav that the Mishnah means there must be enough time for the food to become roasted as the food of Ben Drosai, Malchel Ben Drosai. Ben Drosai was a bandit that would cook his food one-third the normal time. That's according to Rashi. Point number two, Rav Chisda explains that we learn from the pasuk of Lo Savaru Eish Bechol Mishmoseichem B'Yom HaShabbos, you shall not kindle fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day, that it is forbidden to ignite a fire in Moshvoseichem, which means anywhere outside of the base of Mikdash, as opposed to the burning of sacrificial parts and fats on the Mizbech, the temple altar, which is permitted. However, this exemption of igniting a fire on Shabbos only applies to the Karbanos, which is, so to speak, for Hashem, and does not apply to kindling the pyre in the base of Mokad, the fire chamber, being that the fire there is only for the use of men. The reason why lighting the pyre in the base of Mokad was permitted before Shabbos, and there was no concern that one might come to stoke the fire after nightfall, is that the Kohanim are conscientious. Kohanim is reason hand, and they'll ensure no one comes to stoke it. And point number three, the opening mission of the second parak of B'mem Medlikin identifies wicks that may not be used for Shabbos lights because they do not hold the flame well, and fuels that are prohibited to be used because they are not easily drawn into the wick. All right, so now let's go to our simmer. So the simmer Dav Chaf is a cafe. A cafe, so here we go. The Ben Drosai Quick Serve Cafe, known for serving meat in a third of the time, featured a huge lit pyre of wood in the center to warm its customers and flickering candlelight due to low quality, oil, and wicks. Once again, in slow motion. The Ben Drosai Quick Serve Cafe, that means we're in Dav Chaf. Once again, the Ben Drosai Quick Serve Cafe, known for serving meat in the third of the time, which reminds us that the mission at the bottom of Yud Tes Amud Beis stated that one may not roast meat, onions, or eggs Erev Shabbos unless there's enough time for them to come roasted before Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar said in the name of Rav that the Mishnah means there must be enough time for the food to become roasted as the food of Ben Drosai, Malchel Ben Drosai. Ben Drosai was a bandit that would cook his food one-third of the normal time. That's according to Rashi. So the Ben Drosai Quick Serve Cafe, known for serving meat in a third of the time, featured a huge lit pyre of wood in the center to warm its customers, which reminds us, the Rav Chisda explains that we learn from the pasuk of Lo Savaru Eish Bechol Mishmoseichem B'Yom HaShabbos, you shall not kindle fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day, that is forbidden to ignite a fire in Moshvoseichem, which means anywhere outside of the base of Migdash, as opposed to the burning of sacrificial parts and fats on the Mizbeach, the temple altar, which is permitted. However, this exemption of igniting a fire on Shabbos only applies to the Karbanos, which is, so to speak, for Hashem, and does not apply to the kindling the pyre in the base of Mokad, the fire chamber, being that the fire there is only for the use of man. The reason why lighting a pyre in the base of Mokad was permitted before Shabbos, and there was no concern one might come to stoke the fire after nightfall, is that the Kohanim are conscientious. Kohanim is reason hen, and they'll ensure no one comes to stoke it. So the Ben Drosai Quick Serve Cafe, known for serving meat in a third of the time, featured a huge lit pyre of wood in the center to warm its customers, and flickering candlelight due to low quality oil and wicks, which reminds us the opening mission of the second parak of B'mem Medlikin identifies wicks that may not be used for Shabbos lights because they do not hold the flame well, and fuels that are prohibited to be used because they're not easily drawn into the wick. So once again, the Ben Drosai Quick Serve Cafe, known for serving meat in a third of the time, featured a huge lit pyre of wood in the center to warm its customers, and flickering candlelight due to low quality oil and wicks. So now it's time for our four blah bat chazora. Daf Tezayin. So the symbol for Tezayin is toes. So here we go. At the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. Toes, that reminds us we're on Daf Tezayin. At the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, which reminds us that even though glass is similar to metal in as much as it can be melted down and refashioned, it's different in the following way. Metalware, which is tummy, when broken down, becomes tahor. When it's refashioned into a new vessel, the rabbis decreed that it reverts to its old status of tumah. Glassware, which is tummy, when broken down, also becomes tahor. But when it's remade into a new vessel, it doesn't revert to its old tumah status. The reason is that since the tumah of glassware is only rabbinic, we don't impose the law of the restoration of an old tumah, which is also only rabbinic, which we're going to talk about in the third point. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. But her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, which reminds us the Rav Ashi is of the opinion that glassware has the halachas of tumah as earthenware, as a klicheris, and not metalware. The Gemara asks that if glassware has the same halachas of tumah as earthenware, as a klicheris, then why then does it contract tumah when it's touched by something tummy on its outer surface, whereas earthenware only becomes tummy when a tummy object goes inside of it? The Gemara answers that being that the transparency of the glass enables one to see the interior of the glass on the outside, it in effect makes the outside surface of the vessel equivalent to the inner cavity. Therefore, when something which is tummy touches the outer surface, it is as if it's within the inside of the vessel, and the vessel becomes tummy as a result. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. But her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her that the fixed metalware would still become tummy. Which reminds us, the reason the rabbis enacted a decree that tummy metalware that became tahor through breakage should revert to its old tumah status when refashioned was as follows. Midaraisa, a metal vessel that became tummy through contact with a corpse, or being in the same enclosed space as a corpse, requires a week-long purification process, which includes sprinkling mechatas, the waters containing the ashes of the paraduma, on the third and seventh day, as well as immersion in the mikvah on the seventh day. So one way to expedite the purification process is to break the tummy vessel, which renders it tahor, and then repair it. Piercing a hole in the vessel as well would be sufficient to consider it broken. The rabbis feared that as a result of this loophole, the institution of mechatas would fall into disuse, so they decreed that the old tumah status would return when the vessel was repaired. Queen Shalzion tried to use this break and repair method at her son's chasna when the utensils were tameh, but the rabbanon told her that the old tumah status returned. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, but her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her the fixed metalware would still become tameh. Daf Yud Zayin. So the symbol for Daf Yud Zayin is a used car. So here we go. The used car salesman, reminding us we're on Daf Yud Zayin. The used car salesman started to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard, which reminds us the rabbis enacted that any movable item that has the thickness of an ox goad, one tefach circumference, can serve as an oil, transmit tumah, and render the person an avad tumah. Rav Akiva explains the reason for the prohibition was as follows. Midaraisa, a farmer carrying a goad over a grave becomes a rishon through direct contact with the goat, since he might mistakenly believe that the cause of his tumah status was the goad serving as an oel instead of his direct contact with it, he might conclude that an oel in general only makes someone a rishon and only requires a day-long tumah instead of the seven-day purification. The rabbis therefore decreed that any movable object that has a one tefach circumference which touches a person while serving as an oel renders a person an avad tumah. So the used car salesman starts to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard after failing with his replanting tummy tumah scheme, which reminds us that another one of the 18 enactments was the decree regarding replanted truma. Midaraisa, when truma is replanted, the resulting growth has the status of chulin, and maybe even by non-kohanim once the standard separations of trumas and maizos have been done. The rabbis were concerned that a kohen in possession of tummy truma would intend to replant it in the sowing season so the new growth would be deemed tahor, and inadvertently come to eat the tummy truma in the meantime. They therefore enacted that the produce that results from replanted truma has the same status as the original truma. If the truma was tahor, the produce was tahor, and if the truma was tameh, then the produce was tameh. Therefore, there'd be no point for a kohen to replant his tameh truma. So the used car salesman started to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard after failing with his replanting tameh truma scheme and no one wanting to buy his bread, oil, or wine either, which reminds us, the bread, oil, wine, and the daughters of idolaters were prohibited as one of the 18 enactments. Prohibiting eating their bread and oil was a way to reduce socializing and prevent intermarriage. According to some, the prohibition of bread only applies to bread cooked in a private home, not commercial bread. In addition to prohibiting drinking their wine, the rabbis also forbid getting any hana, any benefit from it, as a concern of yain nesach, wine poured as a libation to idols. And while marrying non-Jewish women is prohibited from the Torah, the rabbi's decree prohibited yichud with them, being in seclusion with them. Daf Yud Ches, so the symbol Yud Ches is a chuppah, so here we go. The chuppah, reminding us we're on Daf Yud Ches. The chuppah by the noisy water mill, where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls, which reminds us, there's machlokas regarding the reason why one may not put wheat in a water mill erev Shabbos if it will continue working during Shabbos. Rabba says it's because it makes a lot of noise, which is a dishonor to Shabbos. Rav Yosef says it's due to the requirement to have one's utensils rest on Shabbos. It's an inyan of Shvi'is Kelim. So the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls, which reminds us that there's malchokas and a brice regarding what is required to make someone liable for the malach of lush, of mixing. Rebbe holds that if one person contributes the flour and another puts in the water or vice versa, the last one is liable since he is the one that caused the ingredients to bind together, even though no manual mixing was done. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Yehuda, holds that one is not liable until one actually kneads the dough manually. So the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls was followed by a meal of partially cooked food with raw pieces of meat served in pots straight from the oven. Which reminds us, the Beis Hillel prohibits placing a pot in the oven before Shabbos, which will continue cooking during Shabbos as a precautionary measure, so that one will not come to stir the coals on Shabbos of Shem Yechata. Therefore, a person may place a pot of raw food in the oven before Shabbos because the person wants it to cook through the night and there is no concern one will stir the coals. A person may place a pot of cooked food in the oven before Shabbos because, again, there is no concern he'll come to stir it. But a person may not place a pot that contains food which is partially cooked in the oven before Shabbos since there is a concern that he will stir the coals. However, if he adds a raw piece of meat into the mixture, then it can be placed in the oven before Shabbos since a person will not come to stir it. So once again, the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground meat and water landed in kneading bowls was followed by a meal of partially cooked food with raw pieces of meat served in pots straight from the oven. Daf Yud Ches. So the symbol Yud Ches is a chuppah, ben Yud Ches or chuppah, an 18-year-old goes to chuppah. So here we go. The chuppah, reminding us we're on Daf Yud Ches. The chuppah by the noisy water mill, which reminds us that machlokas regarding the reason why one may not put wheat in a water mill erev Shabbos if it will continue working during Shabbos. Rabbi says it's because it makes a lot of noise, which is a dishonor for Shabbos. Rabbi Yosef says it's through the requirement to have one's utensils rest on Shabbos. It's an inyan of Shvi'is Kelim. So the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls, which reminds us, there's a machlokas and a brice regarding what is required to make someone liable for the malach of lush, of mixing. Rebbe holds that if one person contributes the flour and another person puts in the water or vice versa, the last one is liable since he's the one that caused the ingredients to bind together even though no manual mixing was done. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Yehuda, holds that one is not liable until one actually kneads the dough manually. So the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls was followed by a meal of partially cooked food with raw pieces of meat served in pots straight from the oven. Which reminds us, Beis Hillel prohibits placing a pot in an oven before Shabbos, which will continue cooking during Shabbos as a precautionary measure so one will not come to stir the coals on Shabbos. It's a worry of Shem Yechata. Therefore, a person may place a pot of raw food in the oven before Shabbos because a person wants to cook through the night and therefore there's no concern one will come to stir the coals. A person may also place a pot of cooked food in the oven before Shabbos because there's no concern he will come to stir it. But a person may not place a pot that contains food which is partially cooked in the oven before Shabbos since there is a concern he will stir the coals. However, if he adds a raw piece of meat into the mixture, then it can be placed in the oven before Shabbos since a person will not come to stir it. So once again, the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls was followed by a meal of partially cooked food with raw pieces of meat served in pots straight from the oven. All right, now it's time to conclude with our pop quiz of 10 questions. Plus, we're going to have 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Here we go. Number 1, where do we learn that the decree that when the truma is replanted, the produce has the same status regarding tuma? That's on Duff. Yud Zayin. Good. Number 2, where do we have the opening mission of the second parak that lists the inferior wicks and fuels? That's on Duff. Chaf. Great. Number 3, where do we learn why one can't put wheat in a water mill if it will continue work on Shabbos? That's on Daf. Yud Ches. Great. Number 4, where do we learn that one can't leave a pot in the oven erev Shabbos if the food has not become roasted? That's on Daf. Yud Tes. Great. Number 5, where do we learn that one can't put a pot of partially cooked food in the oven erev Shabbos unless one throws a raw piece of meat in as well? That's on Daf. Yudches. Good. Number six. We're going to learn that Savaru Esh Bekomen Shavosecha implies outside the base of Migdash and inside the base of Migdash if the fire is not on the Mizbeach. That's on Daf. Chaf. Good. Number seven. We're going to learn that laundering white clothes is harder than cowards. That's on Daf. Yud Tes. Good. Number eight, where do we learn that one can't leave meat in the oven Erev Shabbos unless it's reached a point of Machal Ben Drosai, at least of one-third cooked, according to Rashi. That's on Daf. Chaf. Good. Number nine, where do we learn that one should not embark on a boat less than 3 days before Shabbos? That's on Daf. Yud Tes. Good. And number ten, where do we have the question whether lush mixing requires manual mixing? That's on Daf. Yud Ches. Great, and now we're going to do the three bonus questions with brachas. Which daf do we learn? Altif Takpela Satan. That's on daf. Yud Ches. Good. Number two. What do we learn? Hakol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Mi Yir Shemayim. That's on daf. Lamed Gimel. Good. And number three. Where do we learn what one should do if they didn't make a bracha and the food is still in one's mouth? That's on daf. Nun. Great, that concludes our pop quiz and the bonus round. This is Rabbi Avram Golda from Zichru wishing you a great day and great learning.